Okay, we're starting. This is the intro to Maseches Challah. So, the word challah means loaf, but it's a misnomer. Loaf, L-O-A-F. It's literally what it means, but let me tell you what it actually is. Challah, in short, is when you make a dough of bread. So, you're supposed to take off a portion of the dough and give it to the kohen. Give it to a kohen. Okay, and that portion you take off is what we call what's become known as challah, even though it's not a loaf literally. The psukim, I'll read you in a second, talk about it as truma, but so as to distinguish it from what we normally refer to as truma, which is really truma gadola, that first tithe. So we'll call it challah. Okay? Exactly what constitutes a loaf and how much and when and where will be the topic of this introduction. But let me first read you the psukim themselves. The psukim, this is the whole parsha on challah. It says, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor." It's in Bamidbar Tesvav, starting with Yudzayim. "Daber b'nei Yisrael." God spoke to Moses, saying, "Tell the children of Israel." "Vamar taleim." Say to them this. "Bavoachem el haaretz." When you come into the land, "Asherani mevi eschem shama," that I will bring you there. "Vaya ba'achalchem milechem haaretz." And when you eat from the bread of the land, "Tarimu truma lashem." You have to remove, truma literally means to take up, a truma to Hashem. "Reishis arisoseichem," the first of your kneading bowls, "challah," a loaf, "tarimu truma," you will take up a truma. "Ketrumas goren ken tarimosa," just like you take a truma at the threshing floor, that's referring to Truma Gadola. "Kein Teruma Osa," you should also take it, meaning this portion from the dough, from the dough. "Mereishis Ariso Seichem Titnu Lashem Truma," from the first of your dough, you will give it to Hashem, a truma, a gift, "Ador Seichem," for your generations. That's the parsha, and obviously quite repetitive, and therefore makes for a world of drashas, which we'll see. But the gist of it is essentially that challah is really truma, right? In all ways. Meaning, so for example, truma, as you recall, is given to the kohen. It can only be eaten by a kohen or his family, which we define in Maseches Truma a little bit. Trumos. So it's the kohen and his household can eat it. They have to eat it b'tahara. If you eat it and you're not a kohen, you get misa with eshamayim. If you do a b'shog, you have to bring a chomesh. All the same, just like truma. It's truma all over again, right?
It just is in fact truma all over again, because it's called truma. Truma was taken from the grain, and now it's taken from the loaf.
It's truma all over again. It's truma essentially across the board. It's just instead of truma from the grain, it's truma from the loaf, exactly, or from the dough, exactly like you said. Okay, we're calling it challah to distinguish it from truma. Okay, now, midoraisa. You're not allowed to be metama truma, of course. So that means you wouldn't be able to be metama the challah from the time that it's taken, separated from the dough. The Midrabanan, they said even dough that's eligible to, like that has truma, that has challah within it, but not as of yet not removed, is still asur to be metama. So Midrabanan, there's no challah yet been removed. It wouldn't be called challah. Midrabanan, you may not even be metama dough which has not had challah removed from it yet. Okay. Now, if it becomes tame, which it will become tame, because we're all tame, right? Should it become tame in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, so then it still goes to the Kohen, just like Truma goes to the Kohen when it becomes tame. And if you remember, just like Truma tame, we had Shem and Sreifa, we had oil that became tame, you still give it to the Kohen, and he can still get benefit from it. The same too would be the case over here. If you were metame your dough or your challah, you'd still give it to the Kohen. He would just, I guess, burn it in his oven and use it as kindling or whatever it is. But it's his property, you have to give it to him anyways. Okay? Now, when do you take your challah? So, midoraisa, the time to take it is from when it's dough. So, what is dough? It's not that I would know, as you know. It's when you mix water and flour together, essentially, and you make it into like a... You mix them with your hands, knead them, okay? Then it becomes like a single mass. That's called dough, and once the dough's occurred, been made, then midoraisa, that's the proper time to take your challah. I really b'di'evet, if you took it from as soon as the water gets poured into the flour, you'd already at that time be able to take challah. And the rabbi said that's a preferable time to take it, because the sooner you get it out to avoid it becoming tummy, the better. So they said, ready, pour in the water and take a challah right away. No, but Lamaisa today, they said since there's no fear of it becoming tummy today, it isn't becoming tummy today because everything and everyone is tummy. So therefore, they said go back to doing it the Doraisa way, which is first make your dough, like the mass of whatever, yeah, and then once after you've kneaded it, then you take off your challah. Okay, now how much you take off? Okay, so really midoraisa has no shear. You saw the psukim just says take a piece off, just like truma has no shear, challah has no shear. The truth is, there's no shear, even the tiniest speck would suffice. On a maximal side, you actually couldn't declare your entire dough to be challah, because then you wouldn't be removing a piece from your challah, from your dough. So therefore, essentially the upper limit is, you know, 99.99%, if you know what I mean. You can't make your whole dough challah, it has to be removed from the main dough, so, but how much you leave is up to you. The rabbi said shiurim, they said that for regular people, you should give 1/24th of your loaf, of your dough, I should say. 1/24th is the number, but if you're like a commercial manufacturer, like a baker, so you may give 1/48th. 1/48th is half of 1/24th. So you're basically looking at roughly 2% of your dough. If you're making large quantities, like if you're commercial. Now, b'zman hazeh, the whole thing's not nogei again, because since we're not really giving anything to the Kohanim, the Rama allows you to take essentially any amount you want, it'd be yotzi again, and that's what we do. Although the minhag today is to take a kazayas. Minhag is to take a kazayas, even though you'd be yotzi with any amount. So the minhag today, lamaisa is to take a kazayas. I have no idea what the halacha is for Sephardim, actually, for what it's worth. The halacha is for Sephardim. I'm just telling me, I have no idea what they do. But for the Ashkis amongst us, you take a kazayas, and you. Anyone here know what Sephardim do? Lamaisa. Okay, I don't know.
I'll sorry.
Sorry.
For
coercion
purposes,
it's still kazayas. No, just. Nah. Well, remember, it was more lenient for commercial manufacturers. Only a 48th. The reason why is because they have bigger quantities. But now, everybody just take a little nominal amount, a kazayas, and be done with it. Yeah. Total sidebar. But I just I keep on meaning to tell you guys. I'm just reminded now. Unrelated. Like, stop the tape for a second. We had a question about Orla and Chutzlaretz. Remember that? I looked it up. I just forgot to tell you. I keep on forgetting to tell you, so I'm telling you now. Challah is Orla, that's 30-year produce. Like, don't get confused. Orla, 30-year produce, the first 3 years of produce is Aser Midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael as well as Chutz La'aretz. Although it's a little interesting is that it's in Eretz Yisrael based on the Torah, and in Chutz La'aretz based on Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. It's fascinating. Fascinating. But in any case, so that answers your question about oranges. Oranges in Chutz La'aretz, they also would have an Isser of Orla, even if they're Goyish orange trees, and you shouldn't be allowed to eat from them. And people rely on Rove. The vast majority of the food supply is not Orla produce.
From the size of design, Chutz La'aretz. It's about a matchbox size.
That's right, matchbox size.
The real meaning is an olive.
Yeah, Kazayas, like the size of an olive.
Yeah.
Volume, correct. Volumetric.
So if you look at an olive and you look at a matchbox, there's a big discrepancy.
Is there? Look at a big olive.
A big olive. Yeah. Some olives really are that big.
Yeah,
I've
big
never
olive.
Seen an olive of matchbox size.
Okay, that's one. That can help you. Let me get back to you in a minute. I'll explain to you more in a minute. I'll get there in a second. There's the issue. I'll explain more in a minute. But anyways, halach lamaisa, go with your matchboxes. That's a safe shear. Okay. Now, what those are chayav in taking challah? So first of all, it has to be made of the five species. That's wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. It's not made from that one of those five grains. Like if you have, I don't know, rice cakes or millet bread or some other fancy thing. So that's no challah taken from that at all. The dough has to be baked. So if it's boiled or fried or I don't know what, sun dried. Yes, that's right. But it has to be correct. Good point. It has to be intended for baking. Good point. So So bagels ostensibly yes, because you do bake it after you boil it. However, donuts, which you just fry and be done with it, no. So fried, like deep fried donuts, no challah we take on that. But bagels, yeah. Okay? Has to be fit for human beings, and has to be, so not animal food type dough, and it has to be also owned by a Jew, as opposed to non-Jewish bread, as opposed to hektish bread, as opposed to hefker bread. Actually, I'm saying bread is probably the wrong term. I should say dough, right? Because it would depend on who owned the dough at the time that it's dough, not sold afterwards, right? Okay. Now, there's a whole story here about how much. This is where it starts. Okay, that's everything up to now is straightforward, right? Fine. Okay, now there's a few like funny things here. First of all, there's a minimum shear on how much dough you need to have before you start taking challah. Okay, this is like a thorny issue. Okay, let me say the end before the beginning. The end of it is bottom line is, if you have 1 point, and I didn't get, I was really disappointed. The even in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, like the Art Scroll user friendly version, they give the quantities in pounds and ounces or kilos and not in cups.
15.5 cups.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know. You're not going to know which cup amounts are going to correspond to my pound amounts. Okay. Oh, I see. That's why they don't do it. That's interesting. Why is it interesting? It's particularly interesting because these are volumetric measurements. Really? Wow. Anyways, okay. The problem is halach lemaisa. People, I mean, in the real world, people don't have scales in their kitchens. I mean, I don't have a scale in my kitchen, right? They use cups to measure out dough and flour, so that's a problem. But anyways, when even pounds and ounces, maybe if they. That's all I can tell you. I'm sorry to tell you. So, sorry. Ah, okay. Good point. You buy the flour by the kilo. Okay. So on the I'm going to give you the end before the beginning. The end of the story is, if it's less than 1.2 kilos, so one kilo bag of flour, you're safe. There's no challah to be taken. Okay. Between 1.2 and all the way up, there's like all the way up to say 2.25, like, you know, there's a yay and nay, there's shitas and complexity. So I should say between 1.2 and 1.6 you should take challah, mafresh challah, but don't say bracha. Now that's between 1.6 kilos, well, I should say between, there's a machlokas. Now you have to ask your local rabbi here. This is the issue. According to Rav Chaim, not 1.6 kilos is when the chiyav to make a bracha kicks in, and according to the Chazon Ish, it's 2.25 kilos. Not a range. It's two measurements. Like since here, usually the Chazon Ish is the chumrah, but here, ironically, like the cuts, you're making a bracha or not making a bracha, like has its own, like the chumrah nakula, right, in a way. So when you should start making the bracha, you have to ask a rabbi what actual number.
Is it just over there? There's no...
Past 2.25, everyone agrees.
You have to take it. Yeah. To
past 2.25 kilos for sure of
2.25 kilos is something?
Yeah. So you're... Yeah. So that's that. Now let me go back and explain why it's like very complex. Okay. The din is you need to have 43.2 eggs, beitzim.
43.2 eggs.
Yeah. 43.2 eggs.
Volume.
Volume. It's a volumetric measurement. Yeah, they're all volumetric measurements.
Kilos is not a volume.
I know. That's why I was sort of fascinated by this point that it's better to weigh it than to do by the cup. What can I tell you? This. I'm sorry. I didn't. Earlier on in the, like I didn't yesterday prepare these like very practical questions. I didn't think of it till this morning. Sorry to say. Yeah, so 43.2 eggs is the shear at which point it's chayev and the dough needing challah. So fine, so that's easy enough to do. That'll be with the bracha. I mean,
with the bracha. 43.2.
Yeah, 43.2 eggs. Here's the problem. That's cool, right? The problem is that there's another Gemara elsewhere that basically speaks out not in terms of eggs amounts, but in finger breadths. That's both. Okay? That's both. And it comes out, the shear there is essentially 10, and that's like a finger's width, like that. Okay? It comes, and the cheshbon comes out, I think 311 cubic etzbos, that's like 10 etzbos by 10 etzbos by 3 and a ninth.
Just give those fingers again.
10, that's 10 finger widths by 10 finger widths by 3 and a ninth.
3 finger and a ninth.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can see the Gemara, yeah, that's how it comes out.
And what is the standard?
Well, that, I don't know, that's part of the problem here. Okay, how do,
this is the time
what's it considered here? Okay, if you want to know what, I don't know, I'll tell you.
That's the measurement for tzitzis. They talk about fingers.
Well, they usually probably use the gudel. The gudel, that's that.
The thumb.
Yeah, it's a little different. But, I don't know, they don't give it here. Sorry to tell you. I don't know. Normal person's finger breadth. Now, here's the
10 by 10 by 3 and a half, that's centimeters.
No, that's finger breadths.
Are those finger breadths?
Yeah, we're not talking halakha l'maaseh tomorrow, I'm just telling you the background. Now, here's this famous. The tzlach is a. Not tzlach, I think, is a note of Yehuda also, right? Same person?
Yeah.
So, the tzlach, he took the time to make a cheshbon and measure it out. He got some eggs and he got some fingers and he made two piles of dough, of flour. And the problem is that the finger breadth method is fabulously larger than the egg method. The egg, an egg is a standard size egg, kabeitza. And he said it just doesn't add up. If you do it with fingers, it comes like twice the size if you do it by eggs. So like he shrugged his shoulders and he concluded, this is like, this opens the door to like a world of halachic complexity. He says it must be that eggs have gone smaller since times of Chazal, and you have to sort of, for every egg you get, you got to double it. So instead of 43.2 eggs like we have them, you got to double that to be 86.4 eggs. Okay? So he reckons that eggs got smaller. That's no, well, the people already are too big as it is. The people already too big. The finger breadth method is too big. I would have concluded that, frankly. I would have concluded maybe people got bigger. That seems like a reasonable assumption. However, what? That's right. Right. I can't say for certain why I didn't assume that right away.
They found like old armor and it's like,
yeah, if you go, if you go to like, I don't know, I was in Prague once by like Franz Kafka's house and so on. That's not so long ago, that's the other day more or less, you know? And like, I don't know how it was, 16th or 17th century, however how old the houses were, I don't remember. But like I'm 6'2". I couldn't get in the house. I was like bending over in half to get in there. Like, these are like little midgets. Seriously, I don't think the door is like 3 feet high. I'm like, telling, it was ridiculous. So, remember in the good old days when they ate like, you know, had like
they
one.
They
didn't have anything. They had whatever they looked at. Everyone didn't have variegated diets. They didn't have pros and cons. It was rough times. So, I would have considered they got bigger. Anyways, but Chazal seemed to articulate in many places, and there's like a general concept that people get smaller over time. I would, again, if I'd been left on the device, I'd assume that means sort of spiritually smaller, but I guess they're not. They're based on different midrashim, and so I guess the consensus amongst the rabbis is that people since the Gemara's time have not gone smaller.
They market at least 5 grades of eggs. You have small, medium, large, extra large, and jumbo.
Average. Medium.
Medium. They would be medium.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's explicit. Medium-sized eggs. That I did see in here. Okay. Medium. They are. Yeah, there are different signs. But I had a Ribbitz question once like this. I had a Ribbitz question because, you know, I borrowed grade B eggs. I don't want to get back grade A eggs, whatever it was. You can't do that. Okay, anyways. So that's the story. So then some want to say you have to double the amount of eggs. That's where all the confusion comes in. Okay, I'm not getting more into that, but that's so you know the background. The reason why the egg doubling business that comes up is because if you square away the shirim between your fingers for challah and the eggs for challah, they don't add up. Okay, fine. That's that. But closure on that confusing issue. Now, there's a new issue here about that's also like confusing, which is it's confusing. Which is where is it chayev? So the pasuk said it said via ba'achalchem milechem ha'aretz when you eat from the bread of the land. So clearly, midoraisa, it's the challah is about Eretz Yisrael's dough. Okay, that's clear, midoraisa. But this is pretty interesting. It's not about where the grain grew. It's about where the dough is. That's really fascinating, right? So if you import, because it's not about kedusha in the produce. It's like challah, really, even though it's like sort of a also one of the mitzvahs of tluyas ba'aretz. It's also a mitzvah that depends upon like agriculture. Tluyas ba'aretz doesn't mean on Eretz Israel, it means on the ground in general. So even though, of course, it's like an agricultural mitzvah, so to speak, but it's totally different in many respects to like truma and maaser in a way. First of all, it's not about kedusha in the ground itself. So therefore, it's about the dough. So if you take flour from America and you bring it here and you make dough, you have to take, if it's the zechi of the rice to take it, take chalas, then the zechi of the rice would kick in even though it's chutzlarts flour. And similarly, if you take flour from Eretz Israel to New York, then if you make dough over there, it's only chayav midarabanan. So that's number one. Number two is exactly.
So just before you go on, you said it had to be owned by a Jew.
Yeah.
So if the flour is grown by goyim, and then
it's
sold to a Jew.
It's whoever owns it when it's dough. So if a Jew owns it when it's dough, then it's chayav. Okay, now, good, now this is, that's straightforward. Now this gets a little complex here. Now, normally when it comes to mitzvot tluyos ba'aretz, you know, agricultural laws, so if they're chayav in Eretz Yisrael, midoraisa, or midorabanan, is based on the question of is a question of whether or not the kedusha of the land from Bayashani's time, from Ezra's time, was it a permanent kedusha or a temporary one? So we've spoken about it a few times. Most learn it's temporary, and therefore bismanazeh, you know, taking truma is only midirabanan and stuff like that. Okay. Now, the Gemara is explicit that it's different when it comes to challah. I already told you some of the differences, but and it gives it the big nafkamina is that when Yeshua first came into Eretz Yisrael, for the first 14 years before they were apportioned the land fully, the mitzvahs like Truma and Maaser didn't kick in yet, but Challah was already in effect because they're already in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that's not so interesting to you. That's an interesting fact you got to know because it happened. So now what happens is, so some Amoraim learn that, you see that it's nothing to do with the Kedusha in the land, because the Kedusha hadn't happened yet before the Kivush of Yeshua and so was completed, and the apportioning, and therefore they learn that Bizman Hazeh in Eretz Yisrael, who cares if the Kedusha that Ezra declared was permanent and Vaishani was permanent or temporary, either way you're in Eretz Yisrael. You see from Yeshua it doesn't depend on Kedusha of the land, and therefore you're chayav midoraisa to take challah b'zman hazeh in Eretz Yisrael. That's one approach. That's one set of Amoraim. The other set of Amoraim learn the exact opposite. Well, they learn different conclusions. They say, you see, what challah depends upon is having the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, bizman hazeh, regardless of whether or not the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is lasting or temporary, since the majority of Jews remain outside of Eretz Yisrael, chal is only midurabanan. Big nafkamina back then would be, in those days, in Vaisheni's time, the kedusha was in the land, but those Amoraim who held that it's dependent on the majority of Jews being back in Eretz Yisrael held that even in Vaisheni's time, chal is only midurabanan. Okay? So, how did the poskim go halach l'maisa for us? There are some poskim brought down by the tour, some rishonim that rule that it's midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael, bizman hazeh even, but the majority learn it's midorabanan. Okay, so the majority learn, but that's temporary. That'll be just until the majority of Jews are back in Eretz Yisrael.
Maybe this year.
This year?
Yeah.
Really? It's a pretty wild year going on here so far, right? That's wild. Okay, good. Buy real estate, maybe. Or sell, I don't know. It's Something big's gonna happen. So no, chas v'shalom. Don't sell. But buy real estate for the long term. They're gonna come. They're coming back. So in the meantime, I guess until the end of the year at least, the majority of Jews remain outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's only Durabunin, according to most. But I guess the tide, you say the tide is turning. That's really amazing. You saw that in an article somewhere?
Yeah.
Really?
Where?
Yeah.
This
year.
After this summer's Aliyah,
probably our
really? Okay, that's exciting. That's big stuff. Okay, so this tape, be warned, this tape is dated the 1st of June, 2010. You can look back nostalgically and think about those silly old Jews in the good old days when they didn't have the mitzvah the raisa, but now, Bez Hashem, soon, it'll be their Jews will be back. That's great. So that's that. Now, okay, so that's, in Eretz Yisrael, it's clear, right? I mean, the story is clear. It doesn't depend on the kedusha of the land. It depends on the halach lamaisa. It depends on the majority of Jews being back in Eretz Yisrael, which is not the case, okay, at the moment. Okay, yes, I'm gonna go to that story. So now, that was Eretz Yisrael. Now Chutz Laaretz. Okay, fasten your seatbelt. This is a little more complex. Okay. So the rabbi has decided, okay, because this is the Machlokas Amoraim about what's it about? Is it about the Kedusha of the land, like in Baisheni's time? Or is it, right, the land even from Ezra's time? Essentially, the world can be divided into three different places, three different regions. There's going to be Eretz Yisrael, which we just discussed a second ago. There's going to be Chutz La'aretz, which means places that were never Eretz Yisrael. We'll discuss that in a minute. Then there's a middle ground, which is places that were part of Eretz Yisrael in Ezra's time. Excuse me. Part of Eretz Yisrael in Yeshua's time, when Eretz Yisrael was a little bigger, but not part of Eretz Yisrael during Baisheni, when Eretz Yisrael was a little bit smaller. Yeah? So, now, the rabbi, so there's three regions. Now, the rabbis decreed, Medir Banan, that all areas outside of Eretz Yisrael, which would be like both of those categories, not Eretz Yisrael, even if it once was Eretz Yisrael, but now it's no longer here. The rabbis declared already in Baisheni's time that Chutz La'aretz is Tamei. End of story. Tamei. And that didn't persist till today. Chutz La'aretz is Tamei. Eretz Am is Tamei. End of story. What are you worried about your Tamei Mace anyways? What I'm saying, but Chutz La'aretz is Tamei Midurabanan. Now, that being the case, all Chala coming out of here is going to be Tamei anyways. Okay? It needs to get burned. But there, Halach Alamais, how's going to work out? There's going to be a big difference if the land that we're talking about is a land where the dough is a place that once was Eretz Yisrael or was never Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so let's first talk about land that once was Eretz Yisrael. If you're talking about a region that currently is out of Israel, but once was part of Eretz Yisrael, so the rabbis said that people should take challah twice. Okay?
Twice.
Why? They said, listen, you're going to...
For example, Jordan?
Yeah. Yeah. For example, Transjordan, that's right. In Jordan.
Syria
is a different thing. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Jordan. I don't know. Yeah.
The East Bank,
that's right. So, now... So what? So, if you... they said like this. If you take challah, then you can't do anything with it, it's tamei.
You
can't do anything with it because it's tamei.
Yes.
So you're going to burn it. So people, your general population won't realize that Eretz Yisrael, that which was once Eretz Yisrael but is no longer, is also subject to the decree of the rabbis that made it tamei. But they won't buy into that. So this is Eretz Yisrael, this is part of, you know, we're coming back here, how could the rabbis even tamei it? And therefore when they see, the rabbis felt, when they see people burning challah in that region, they'll think, oh, I guess challah you could burn, I guess. So that's no good. So the rabbi said that you have to take challah once and you'll have to burn it, but then you have to take challah a second time and give it to Kohanim. And then that's a little weird, and people will say that's a little weird, and then they'll, by their inquiry, what's going on here, they'll come to understand this funny situation. So they make you take challah twice. Now, so the first time it's really challah, so in other words, the first time it's like has a It could be, actually, depending on that previous machlokas, it could be chala medoraisa if it's got to do with the land that once was Eretz Yisrael. Whatever it is, so that you'll take there for that, you'll take the proper shear, the 1/24th, and you'll burn it. Then you have to give a second portion to the Kohen, and for that you'll give any amount. So that's just a rabbinic, you know, just made up by the rabbis, so you could just to do something weird so people would realize. So they said you can give any little amount to the Kohen. That would be in a place that was once Eretz Yisrael but is no longer. This isn't even halacha l'maaseh. I'm just telling you, this is like already in the Gemara's time. Okay? Then you have a second category of place, which is outside of Eretz Yisrael altogether. Like, you know, New York. Never was part of Eretz Yisrael, and never was going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. So, here, the rabbis said, it's pater midoraisa, but people, and there's no challah to talk about. The problem is, people will be in exile for a long time, and, you know, 1,000 years later, they're going to forget all about challah altogether. Like, no one took challah in 1,000 years. We've heard of challah before. So they said, no, therefore people should take challah as a midorabundance, so they shouldn't forget the mitzvah of challah. Okay? So what are they going to do? They're going to take challah and they're going to burn it.
You said the same thing about
remember I told you about the blanket that's, you know, either too short to cover your face or cover your feet? Like, these are going to, you're going to, there's always, the rabbis decided what they thought was likely to happen, not how likely to happen. Like in other words, yeah, what can I tell you? Because, did I mention this? The Kohanim, did I mention this a second ago? Sorry if I didn't. The Kohanim, that second, if you, they're talking about the land that was once Eretz Yisrael but is no longer, and by that you give two challahs, the second one that you can give any amount to the Kohen, the Kohen could eat it. The Kohen may eat it, he's permitted to eat it because it's not, even though, I don't know, it's tummy because it came from Chutz La'aretz, but doesn't matter because it's not really challah. Right? It's just, so if you want to ask questions, like, wait a second, they'll learn the wrong halacha of that, they'll think you guys eat the tummy food, like, I can't answer the question, like, it's a, but anyways, however they decided, that's how they decided. Maybe they figured Kohanim are more learned in general, so they will understand what's flowing, but the general that's too worried about, I can't say. But here, in Chutz La'aretz proper, in New York, they figured, you know, people sit in Spain or Babylonia for 1,000 years and forget about challah, therefore everyone should take challah, just, you know, so keep the challah tradition alive. So you pull up some challah and you burn it. But then they said, if people do that for 1,000 years, people will forget that challah goes to Kohanim. They'll just think challah is like a piece to take off and burn it right away. So therefore, they made you take a second challah also in Chutz La'aretz, believe it or not. And that one also goes to the Kohanim. But here, it's switched around, where they figure since both anyways are just totally rabbinic inventions with no halachic basis, no Torah basis, and you're going to burn one and you're going to give one to the Kohanim, you might as well, instead of, we said in the other region, the place like the Jordan region, so we said you're going to take a shear and burn it and then give a little speck to the Kohen. They figured since they're both equally made up, why should you do that? Why don't you take a speck and burn it, the challah, and give the bigger piece, the shear, for the Kohen to eat. So it switched around. And in Chutz La'aretz proper, the rabbi said you should take two challahs. The first one, so you shouldn't forget challah. The second one, so you shouldn't think the challah is just for burning. But the first one you take will be just a little speck, and you'll burn that. And the second one will be a full kazayas, or whatever it is, a full amount, shear, 1/24th of the dough, and that you'll give to the Kohen. Okay, now, that's
in the book period.
Oh, it's like, I'm over there.
He talks there, this whole thing is in Surrey, it's up in the north, to the east, not
I would have thought Jordan is also part of Eretz Yisrael.
I'm talking about Surrey.
Wherever it is. Now, okay, we haven't got anywhere near halacha l'maaseh, because here's what happened. There are certain, all that we said is true, but certain exemptions in terms of giving teruba, and so I don't even get into it. The point is, the halacha, because of these certain exceptions about taking your second challah, needing to take a second challah, and sometimes you don't have to take a second challah, so the minhag became, and the minhag is, the story today, despite the fact that everything I told you, that's how you learn the Gemara, there's only one challah we take, we rely on those exemptions and exceptions, and therefore we only take one challah today. And like I told you originally at the outset, we take only a little amount. It doesn't matter how much. The minig, however, has become to take a kazayas, an olives amount. So even though really you could take any amount of challah and burn it, it's a you just take take a kazayas amount. Now,
what date would that come from?
What date? I don't know when I started. I don't know.
1,000 years ago. 2,000 years.
I don't know. Well, no, less than 2,000 years ago.
Between
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know when the minhag became that way. Already in the Gemara, there are certain exceptions to taking two, and then I don't know when. I just don't know. Now, but b'zman hazeh, everyone takes this one challah and burns it. Now, the Gemara says the way to do it is to throw your challah into the fire that you're cooking with. Okay. Now. Halacha l'maisa. Now I'm talking halacha l'maisa here. Now, that's a dangerous game to play. Challah is iser, right? Not allowed to eat it. Minei Yisrael could be even doraisa, right? And you don't want to have, just like you wouldn't incinerate pork chops in your oven when you're cooking. You'd probably be hesitant to incinerate. You should be hesitant to incinerate truma in your oven also. Actually, more so because pork chops is just pork, but Truma, if it's a Doraisa, and Challah, it's Misvedei Shemaim, serious business. So, in those days, they had like open fire ovens, so it went to the fire. Here, like our days, nowadays, you put in the oven, it's just sitting inside a box, smoking away and getting absorbed into your food. So, bottom line is, some people have the custom of wrapping up in tinfoil and letting the steam and stuff stay inside the tinfoil and roast inside there. That's one way of doing it. I think it's a dangerous way to do it. You'll likely trip up your oven, etc. A second way to do it is to put it straight into the fire on the range top. Like, you know, there's a fire.
Is that the hot plate?
Not a hot, well, the gas, the stove, the fire. Put it on the stove top. Put it on the stove top, on the fire, on the range, and let it burn there. You won't have a cautious problem there, but you might have a house full of smoke stinking problem if you do that method. So that's a downside. I don't know. So you can ask your local rabbi how to best go about disposing of your challah. In the Parrot's household, if you care, what we do is we wrap the challah in tin foil and we put it in the freezer. And it sits there the whole year long. And then, at B'dikas Chametz time, that night, I take it out of the freezer and I put it inside the box with the rest of the Chametz I found, and I burn it with the Chametz.
Every time you go over to the challah?
Yes, I have like a whole drawer in my freezer full of little bowls. I'm going to make challah every week. What?
That's why
I have a big freezer. Yeah, so we have a whole drawer full of challah bowls.
But you're safe with the top of the oven, with the hot plate.
Well, the fire, not the hot plate, the fire. To put on the fire, you can put on the fire. Yeah, well, it's smoking up. But there's a downside, it's going to make smoke. It's burning. Okay, that's how I do it. Now,
You're saying if you want to kind of steam escapes instead of oil, it's not your oven's tray?
No, not the steam wouldn't be a problem, but... No, but if it's like, I don't know if it opens up, if it opens up and touches the oven, yeah.
Barbecue.
You can put it on an open fire in the barbecue. Yeah, the coal, yeah.
Since we're on the
whole
floor, are you allowed to get enough on it? Could you use all the dough balls to like, you know, cook up barbecue?
Yeah, I guess we'd say,
I'm making barbecue. I'm like, oh, hey, I have some dough in my freezer. Let's just chuck it in there while there's burgers on top of the pie.
We came out saying that in Truma that you're allowed to get hanaf from Truma if you're not a Yisrael, if you're not a Kohen, but not in a way that it destroys it from the Kohen. So I guess that would not be okay. I would suspect. Now. Okay, I'll finish up halacha l'maisa. With the rabbani, you're not supposed to avoid the chiyuv of challah. So in other words, if you're making, I don't know, you're making 3 kilos worth of dough into a lot of challahs, you shouldn't divide into lots of small batches to avoid the mitzvah that you shouldn't do. But you certainly don't have to when you make dough. This is 1.2 kilos and more. It's quite a lot of dough to make. You know, it's a lot of bread. So 1.2 kilos of flour, I should say, makes a lot of dough. So you don't have to go out of your way to go within the shear. Although I think there's quite a strong minhag in Klal Yisrael that women on Erev Shabbos do make challah challah that you eat, like the, you know, eat, you know, the braided bread, and they take challah, this truma, when they do it, then it's a strong minug. So they should do that, and when they do that, they should make a bracha. The bracha is Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu lahafrish challah, who commanded us to remove challah. And some have a girsa of lahafrish challah min ha'isa, from the dough. Okay, one thing's for sure: if you remove the challah after you've baked it, you shouldn't say the words min ha'isa, because no longer isa; it's now just bread. Okay, so that's that. And you pull off a kazayas of challah, and the proper thing to do is to declare that piece of dough that you're pulling off challah by saying, like, you say zu challah. Yeah, you declare like this is yeah.
When they
say harezu challah, harezu challah.
So when they make matzah, based on the numbers you're saying today, when they make matzah, they not mix more. They mix less than 1.2 kilos of dough in
line. Each batch, do they have to make?
Because the halacha, you're not allowed to mix.
I don't know.
That they
I don't know. Just, you know, there's the general rule in life. Like, you never want to ask directions for someone who doesn't drive. So you never want to ask halacha ma'aseh the question for somebody who doesn't. Like, I don't know. I never made a matzah before, so don't ask me. But I'm serious. It's an important. No, I never have. Anyways, it's an important. It's important to you.